This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. Look for their newest line, Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen. Join me every Wednesday as I talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. Today's episode number 90 of Feast Your Ears. I'm almost up to that magic 100 that'll happen next season in 2018. Next week is Thanksgiving, when we all collect around the table to remember many things. For me, it's how the Pilgrims almost died without the help of the Native Americans, and it's time to talk politics with family. But it's also a time to remember and give thanks for what we have. Earlier this month, I interviewed a couple of cranberry farmers about that ubiquitous red berry that we all seem to consume once a year, and perhaps we should start eating a little bit more.
Hi, my name is Diane Moss. My husband and I operate and own Elm Lake Cranberry in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin.
Excellent. And Marianne, can you introduce yourself, please?
Yes. Hi, I'm Marianne Lee. My husband Stephen and I have a farm in rural New Jersey in Burlington County in Chatsworth.
Great. Thank you so much for joining me today for this episode, this recorded episode of Feast Your Ears. Today, I'm here talking with Diane and Marianne about cranberries. They are on tour with Ocean Spray. Can I refer to you as the Cranmas? Is that?
Yes, absolutely.
So Ocean Spray's play on, obviously, Grandma, and we're talking about Thanksgiving, and we're talking about cranberries. So you're both cranberry farmers and both grew up in cranberry farming, correct?
Yes.
We're both married into it.
And my husband married into it.
So tell me a little bit about growing cranberries. You know, I think that as someone who lives in the city, I mean, I've spent time outside the city, I haven't lived here always, we know a lot about other plants, right? If I ask my daughter, who has grown up and goes to school in Brooklyn, what does corn look like? She could probably draw me a corn plant.
Yeah.
If I asked her to draw me cranberries, she would draw a little red circle, but have no idea how that actually grows. So Marianne, could you tell me a little bit about how do cranberries grow?
Yeah, they grow on a vine, not a bush. It's in a low pH soil in New Jersey, so it's one of the good places. Our pH of our soil is 4.5. And there's horizontal vines, and they run across the ground. And then the vertical vines are the ones that have the berries on them. So we come through. They're perennial. They'll last forever. We have bogs that have been planted in the 40s on our farm.
Wow.
We do change the variety of them from time to time because they don't all survive only because of different viruses that they might get or things, and they become diseased, and so the production isn't as good as it used to be, so then we replace them. The only time they're got water on them, which is when we pick them, and which is now, for about 3 weeks in the fall, and then we'll put water on them December 1st in the on the bogs. Each one of the bogs has a ditch around it, and we lower and raise the water according to what we're doing. So we will put water on them to protect them from the winter. And the kids go ice skating because they're only about 18 inches, so we don't have to worry about them falling in.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully it will freeze, and it's a source of recreation for them.
Yeah.
And then May 1st, we take the water off, and the plants are very, very fragile at that point in time. But every bog has sprinklers in them, so we will protect from the frost, and we get frost as late as July 4th.
Oh, wow.
At night. So that's one way. And it's a perennial, and it works.
Hmm. And when is the harvest?
Our harvest ranges from about the 5th of October we have 5 more bogs to do, so we will be finished by the end of next week.
Got it. Right in time for
it's
Thanksgiving.
It's about 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Diane, do they grow the same in Wisconsin?
Pretty much. It's a little colder in Wisconsin, so they'll start budding in the spring just a little bit after. And we start harvest the 15th of September.
Oh, okay.
On our marsh, we have a lot of, we've replanted a lot of ours with new varieties. The universities, Rutgers, the University of Wisconsin, have really developed some new types of vines working with Ocean Spray. And so we've replaced a lot of ours. And a lot of ours are early varieties, so they're very red September 1st already.
Got it. And is that how you know that they're ripe and ready for harvest? They turn red?
Usually they turn red, but because every year, with it being a perennial, the vines get deeper and deeper, so there will be a lot of berries underneath that will be white, but the seeds, because the cranberry is a fruit, the seeds will be brown and it is ripe.
I see. And how many commercially harvested varieties of cranberry are there?
I would say there's
at least 100.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
I think so, yeah.
I mean, we think about, you know, I certainly know the variety of apples, right?
Right.
I mean, you go to the farmer's market. I was at the Union Square Market yesterday here in Manhattan, and, you know, there's lots of apples this time of year. I mean, New York's a big apple state, so that we see all these different varieties. When I think of cranberries, all I think of is a little red berry.
Mm-hmm.
And then are there different flavors and different amounts of sweetnesses and acidities
mm-hmm.
with those?
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
And favorites.
Yeah.
Favorites, yes.
And, and very often they're named after the farmers.
Sure.
Yes.
We have
yeah.
Haynes variety. We have Searles from Wisconsin. We have Crimson Queens. We have Mullica Queens, which is a river that runs, and our harvest, our water goes into the Mullica River watershed.
Oh, very
so
cool.
So it's like we name them different things.
And different areas, because they're grown in Massachusetts, New Jersey, Wisconsin, Oregon, and Washington in the United States. They all have different varieties that grow better in different regions.
Sure, sure, sure. Just like apples.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like
mm-hmm.
that. So do you, Marianne, have a favorite variety?
My favorite variety is Early Black,
because
they're nearly very black, and my cranberry sauce is really dark, but it's really susceptible to disease, and these new varieties that Diane's talking about is what we're going to replace the Early Black with,
I see.
Much to my chagrin.
You won't keep a little bit just for yourself?
No. No, the yield is not good. We got 75 pounds. We got 75 barrels. A barrel is 100 pounds.
Got it.
We got 75 barrels per acre on our yield for Early Blacks this year. The rest of them, Crimson Queen, we got 350 barrels.
Oh, wow.
So there's a really big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you have a favorite, Diane?
I do. They're called the Ruby Stars, and they are a new variety. And they ripen by the 15th of September, and they are sweet in comparison.
Sure, sure, sure. So, Marianne, you mentioned your cranberry sauce.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your cranberry sauce recipe? Can you divulge that, or is that a secret?
Oh, sure. My cranberry sauce recipe is 4 cups of cranberries, 2 cups of water, and boil that together until it gels. I put it through a Foley food mill because my kids don't like the seeds in there. And then I add some sugar according to my taste.
Sure. And that's it, just straight cranberry?
That's straight cranberry. Nothing
else.
Yeah. Sometimes I will add some Grand Marnier, which adds a little bit of sweetness and
sure.
some orange flavor.
Yep.
But relish is the thing that my kids like to do. I have 6 grandkids, and they're the ones that initiate, Grammy, it's time to make the cranberry relish. And that's 4 cups of cranberries and 2 apples that are cored but not peeled, and 1 orange that's a navel orange, so you don't get any skin, but you use the rind and everything. They just cut it up. And I have pictures of them all doing it, and they'll do it in about a week.
Nice.
So it'll be good for Thanksgiving.
Oh, nice. That's great. Yeah, and that's when I was a kid, that was my mom always added a whole orange.
Mm-hmm.
with the cranberries, and I don't think she put apples in, but that was it was a chunky kind of relish that we used often.
Yeah.
And then my wife loves, actually, Ocean Spray canned cranberry sauce.
Mm.
And so at our table, we always have that. I feel bad. I should have brought it today. My favorite piece of silver plate that we use every year actually was made in the 50s, and it is a silver plate tray and spoon that is made for canned cranberry sauce.
That's nice.
And it's
nice
a long time ago, but I love it because it's just, you know, the ribbing on the can, on the gel, and then you have this very fancy, I love it, you have this fancy silver plate that goes with sort of the rest of the fancy deal. In my house, that was always, I mean, you know, it was Thanksgiving and Christmas, and then maybe someone's birthday when we trotted out the nice china and the silver, and pretty much never the rest of the year, no matter what. So that was really when we did it. And Another question I wanted to ask is, so in your houses, and Diane, I'll start with you, I imagine you guys preserve a lot of cranberries and use them throughout the year.
We do.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite ways to preserve them, say, to use them in the, you know, in the dark months, I mean, in February?
Well, by preserving, we freeze. I freeze sure. 50 pounds of cranberries. And my favorite way is to make cranberry pie. And it's an easy cranberry pie because it doesn't, the topping is the crust. And I use it for bake sales. I make hundreds of pies. And that's about the only thing I really bake. But they always sell.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's a great idea. I love the flavor of cranberries. I love things that are tart. And so I really, really like them. But I, you know, they are often only available. I mean, you can buy them frozen now, but I remember, you know, fresh, you can get them at this time of year. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like, you know, collectively, as Americans, we kind of forget about them, right? After Thanksgiving, it's sort of like we're on to the next thing. And at least for me, I feel like I always forget about it. So it's nice to have this conversation to try and remember this year that I could do it. What about canning, about pickling cranberries, anything like that? Do you do anything like that?
I do. I can cranberries. I can my own cranberry sauce.
Sure.
So, and I can my own salsa, but a really, my favorite recipe is cranberries. If you could buy a can of cranberry sauce and you buy a jar of salsa and you mix the two, and it's fabulous with chips.
Oh, that sounds delicious. I 2 years ago, I canned my own cranberry sauce. I didn't make it shelf stable, but I made my own cranberry sauce and made it gel, and I did it in a can for my wife.
In a can?
In the can. So I took a can of Ocean Spray cranberry sauce, and I took it out, and we had that on the table. But then I took the can and I set my own gel in it, so that I could gel my homemade cranberry sauce, but it would be in the shape of the can. So that was a really
There's magic in that can.
Yeah.
My mom used to do that.
Yeah.
Same thing. Yes.
Yeah. recently, we started actually using a lot of dried cranberries. My son is allergic to lots of things, but loves fruit, and so it's, you know, sometimes hard to keep a lot. We have a small New York apartment kitchen, and it's hard to keep a lot of fresh fruit around. But he likes dried fruit, so we've been starting to eat a lot of dried cranberries. And my wife has started putting into some interesting things. We do a lot of fermented things. We do a lot of sauerkraut and a lot of kimchi at home, and so my wife just put it into kimchi.
Oh.
So she made a batch of carrot and daikon and cabbage kimchi, and then once that had fermented and was nice and pickled, she mixed in dried cranberries and then put it in the refrigerator, and it's absolutely delicious.
Yeah. That's enough sugar to just counteract that kimchi.
Exactly. And it's really sort of all purpose. It's great on salad. It was great. We had pork chops the other night. I mean, it went really well. And then you get the tartness also from the cranberries.
Yeah.
That was a really, you have any sort of oddball uses that people might not expect
oddball
for cranberries?
Oddball uses. No, I'm pretty, I like baking a lot. I wanted to know about your cranberry pie. Now, do you put walnuts on that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
And mine has almond extract.
Oh, mine doesn't.
Yeah.
How about that?
That cranberry cake really, and it's a you turn it upside down.
Mm.
It's an upside down.
Okay.
My cranberries and my walnuts are on the bottom. And then I put the batter, the batter has two tablespoons of almond extract.
Okay.
And then I turn it over. And that also does sell a lot.
Okay.
Sounds beautiful with the cranberries on
it
top.
It does. Yeah,
yeah.
It really does.
It is. My recipe is actually Ocean Spray's recipe. And so that can be found on their website.
Okay. Cool.
The only thing I do different is I actually add a half cup more of cranberries and put it in a deeper pie shell.
Got it.
So,
yeah. I also add, I make cranberry apple pie. My kids like that. Other than that, I'll make scones with craisins.
Sure.
I also mix fresh cranberries with green pepper and orange rind and oranges, and it's like a little relish.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pretty one because it's a combination of, and you add a little cinnamon to it, and it's just like a sauce, but a conserve.
Yeah.
You kind
yeah,
of
yeah.
you know add,
sure.
it. But it's different. It's kind of different between green pepper and the cranberry, but it's a nice mixture.
Yeah, I had thought recently about trying to make like a cranberry ketchup. you know, mm-hmm. cranberries and tomatoes and really cooking them down mm-hmm. and putting them through a food miller and a blender to really make it smooth because of the sweet. Because I don't like using a lot of commercial, you know, commercial ketchup has so much corn syrup in it. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be nice to be able to control the sugar, but to have the tartness instead of necessarily so much vinegar, you could use cranberries, I thought, about doing that. I have to say, I mean, all of this talk of, you know, trying to move away from Thanksgiving, I mean, let's talk about Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is a wonderful holiday, and the food, for me, I think one of the things that's so great is that we do get to have that, you know, the cranberry relish or the cranberry sauce. And I feel like a lot of the other, in a lot of other cultures, you often serve something that's either sweet or sour with other foods. And I feel like a lot of times, at least when I was growing up, we didn't really ever do that. I mean, that was the only time that you had this condiment that was sort of omnipresent on the table that wasn't ketchup mm-hmm. Or mayonnaise. But it's such a great condiment. I mean, you can serve it with chicken, you can serve it with pork. I mean, it goes with all these other mm-hmm. things, but we, of course, are stuck in this turkey thing.
Yes, we have a saying that's the perfect mate for every meat.
So it's true. It
increases, you know, the usage of cranberries throughout the year.
Yeah.
Because it's great with ham, it's great with a lot of things.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. You put a lot of care and thought into what you eat. After all, you're a food radio listener. That thoughtfulness goes hand in paw with how you feed your pets. Purposeful pet food doesn't happen by accident. Castor and Pollux scours the earth to carefully select the best organic and responsibly sourced ingredients. New Pristine from Castor and Pollux is the only complete line of pet food made with ingredients that are responsibly raised, caught, or grown. Feed your dog or cat the new standard, like grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, and vegetables grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemical pesticides. Pristine from Castor and Pollux. Purposeful pet food. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
So, Diane, your family, you have 10 younger siblings.
Yes.
And which means that your family, I mean, you have 7 granddaughters.
Yes.
Right? So how many people are at your Thanksgiving table, and do you host?
I host probably every other year.
Okay.
And there are usually about 60 of us together. And
holy moly.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. A lot of mayhem. Someone asked me yesterday in an interview, you know, what type of music do you play? I said, it's just a lot of talk and a lot of yelling.
Yeah, I would imagine if you played music, you wouldn't be able to hear anything.
You would never hear it. So it's just a really fun time. And we, you know, don't get together all the time. So when we do, we really appreciate each other.
How many turkeys do you end up cooking?
Two. Two turkeys, but then we also make venison, and we'll also make like a meatloaf kind of thing. So, we have a lot. It's a lot of food. Everyone brings things. It's a lot of fun.
I'm sure. That's great. And what about you, Marianne? How many people usually at your table?
We travel to Maine for Thanksgiving. My mother-in-law was from Maine, and we have about 65 cousins in an old farmhouse in Maine. We have 4 turkeys. 2 of them are fried by my son. And 2 of them are done by cousins. Everybody brings something. I'm trekking up 95 with at least 6 pies in my trunk. I have all the sweet potatoes casserole that I've made the last 2 days or talked about.
Sure.
All the cranberry stuff. And then it's at a dairy farm, so we have that at 1 o'clock at noon. And then we have to go out and milk the cows.
Right.
And then they come in again. And everybody eats again.
Right, sure.
And we have ham or get out the turkey and have turkey sandwiches and cranberry sauce.
Right.
So, but it's wonderful. We start out with prayer and bless this house, and we gather together, and it's all related. We're all cousins of some kind.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's amazing to hear. I mean, I can't imagine. I don't think that even between myself and my wife, with our extended families, we could even put together 60 people. We're both from relatively small families, you know, 12, 14, 16, 18, maybe. I remember when I was a kid, we had 26 once, and that was famously a Thanksgiving where my father got a 26-pound turkey that barely fit in the oven, and I was a little kid. And when he was taking the turkey out of the oven, it was dark golden brown, and it was the same color as our dog, and I started crying because my dad called the dog Turkey. That was his nickname for the dog. And I started crying because I thought they'd cooked the dog.
Sure.
And they had to run outside and find the dog who was out playing in the woods and bring her in so that I would know that they hadn't cooked the dog for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But, you know, we often have a lot. My brother-in-law loves a culinary project So no matter what, he always decides last minute to do something very involved. And often, I mean, I think last year there were like 12 of us at Thanksgiving, and I think we had two turkeys. Mm-hmm. And not small ones either, because he decided that he was going to make his own turkey in his own way. So we had, you know, we're only 12 people, and we needed like maybe a 14, 16-pound bird. And I think we had like a 16-pound bird and a 22 or something. It was so much turkey, I just couldn't believe it. So you said, Marianne, that your son fries two
turkeys.
Yes,
he does.
How do you cook the other two?
They're roasted traditionally, yeah. Traditionally. Yeah, and our family's been doing this. Well, personally, I've been doing it for the last 50 years. My husband and I have been married 50 years this year.
Congratulations.
And thank you. But his family was the one that started it. Yeah. And they did that for at least 15 years before that. So.
Wow. And then what about you, Dan? How do you cook the turkeys?
We do it traditionally, yeah, too. Although I do put a bottle of champagne in mine. Oh. That really, I don't have to brine it anymore, yeah, because of that champagne with fruit and herbs, and it just turns out really juicy.
That sounds great. There was a recipe I've done. We had a very small Thanksgiving where family wasn't really able to get together, and I think there were only six of us a couple years ago. And there was a recipe that Mark Bittman did in the Times for taking the turkey apart. And you end up in a large roasting pan, you put the legs and thighs, and then you fill it with stock,
yeah,
with all the root vegetables. And then about halfway through cooking, you lay the breast meat on top. So the breasts get roasted, but the legs and thighs get simmered.
Need more time.
Exactly. They need more time. And that was delicious. I really like doing it that way.
Yeah.
It turned out really great. And so I've actually started doing that sometimes, not on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But I'll only get like a half a turkey or something, because I mean, there's only, it's myself and my wife and our two kids. We can't possibly cook a whole turkey and then eat it any other time of year unless we're having a big party, I think. Do you guys grow anything else on your farms?
We did grow blueberries.
Okay.
But we've pulled out blueberry plants and put in cranberries.
Yeah, just seemed to work better in the soil.
It did. The co-op that existed for our blueberries wasn't as good as the Ocean Spray co-op. So we were paying bills, our blueberry, with cranberry money. We thought, this doesn't make sense.
Sure.
So we waited till my father-in-law died before we pulled out all the blueberries. But we
blueberries were important to him.
Blueberries were very important to him.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, and it sounds like, I mean, if you're going up to Maine and if you still have family in Maine, you have a connection to blueberries.
Oh, we definitely do. Yeah. Well, we always compare, because ours are high bush and theirs is very low bush.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the picking of the Maine. I've spent a lot of time in Maine. And
you have.
Yeah, I have some family up there, and the picking of the Maine blueberries is so
rough.
Yes, it is, literally. I mean, for people who are listening who don't know, there are essentially two. I mean, there are more than that, but there are two kinds. There are high bush blueberries, which can be picked off a bush where you can just stand, mm-hmm, and there are low bush berries, which grow very close to the ground and need to be raked.
Yeah.
And it is very difficult work raking and cleaning those low bush blueberries. Mm. What about you, Diane? Do you raise anything else on your farm?
We do. We actually raise blueberries too, because the pH for cranberries and blueberries is very similar. But ours are just for personal use. And then we have probably 25 apple trees.
Oh, okay.
So for personal, apple trees, the blossoms attract bees, and bees are good for pollination for the cranberries. So
absolutely. And do you keep any hives on your farm at all, or just wild, just whatever bees happen to come by?
No, we rent beehives.
Got it. And same thing for you, Mary.
Definitely, yeah. Yes. We can't depend on what's in the woods,
right,
to pollinate.
Yeah, yeah.
We had them.
Yeah, we had for a number of years, we had bees on our roof in Brooklyn. And unfortunately, we decided that where the location was just not very good for them. We were right near the highway, and the sound of the trucks and the exhaust and things, the bees just really didn't thrive, and we moved them to a different location. I gave them to a friend of mine who's a beekeeper, and she moved them into a beautiful community garden, and they're doing wonderfully. So it's actually great. She has the hives now, but every year she gives me a jar of honey from them, so it's really...
Best of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly. Is there anything else that you think we should know about cranberries that people might not?
Cranberries are wonderful for decorating. There's a whole host of crafts, from having floating berries in a vase and then putting in a floating candle. You could have a little pine with it. You can make cranberry balls for centerpieces. They're so versatile that way.
Will that work? Will they still float if they've been frozen? Like if I were to buy them frozen and defrost them, or do you really need fresh berries for that?
You need fresh berries, but frozen berries, because they will turn more red when they're frozen, you can put them in a vase, and then you can just set a candle in it,
oh,
and
yeah,
it will keep for about a week, and it'll be gorgeous.
Oh, that's a great idea. I love that. Marianne, do you have any secrets about blueberries?
The old traditional stringing cranberries.
Sure.
All my grandkids have done that and put it with popcorn, and it's they'll last about 10 days.
Yeah.
On the tree.
Yeah, yeah. And I honestly prefer that. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, we always used tinsel, mm-hmm. and it was such a mess to clean up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having all that plastic around them, and I prefer, and it's a lot more fun now. My kids are 8 and 4, so now they can do that, and I think that's a really fun project.
It is.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to know a little bit more about the co-op. I had no idea. Ocean Spray, to me, was a company that obviously made cranberries and cranberry juice, and I remember the commercials from when I was a kid, but you both mentioned co-op, and I didn't know that it was a co-op. So the way it works is your farm is a member of that co-op?
That's right. There's 700 growers.
Got it.
And they're in several states. They're in Washington, Oregon, Wisconsin, Massachusetts, New Jersey. And then we have members up in Vancouver, British Columbia. And we also have some in Chile.
Oh, wow.
And Nova Scotia.
Huh.
And Quebec.
And are there...
And New Brunswick.
And New Brunswick. Right. Wow.
You're right.
Lots of places.
Yeah.
And is that, I mean, do you know a lot of other members in the co-op? Do you get to meet people from other places who mm-hmm. are also growing?
Yes, we have an annual meeting that we're lucky enough to go to. We tend to go every year.
Yeah.
We didn't always.
Sure.
And then sometimes we bring our kids and let them understand what the co-op is about, because they're very active on the farm.
Yeah, I was going to ask, actually, that was another question.
Yeah, my son works full-time on the farm. He spent 10 years in the hospitality management. We told him he had to go out and find a job someplace else before he came home
yep.
to the farm, but it was one thing he really wanted to do. So he's one of our full-time workers on the farm. We only have 4. We go, and it's really it's wonderful to see the people of the different states.
That's where Marianne and I met.
Cool. Yes, that's right.
It was an annual meeting.
Annual meeting, yeah.
That's very cool.
And we harvest differently,
yep.
but would they all go to the co-op?
Got it. And then do you do any processing on the farm of the berries, or essentially they're picked and then they move on to a processing facility?
Yes, ours goes to the freezer.
Got it.
Right from the farm.
Got it. And yours, Diane, same?
The same.
Yeah. And as far as, so do most cranberries get frozen directly off the farm and then used as needed to make things like juice and processed later? Or are there certain things where they need to be processed fresh versus frozen?
Well, we have fresh growers and we also have processed growers.
I see.
We don't have any fresh growers in New Jersey. Wisconsin, I know they do.
Wisconsin has a lot, but all of ours are for processing.
Got it.
So it's a combination of what the co-op needs.
Yeah, absolutely.
The shelf life of cranberries doesn't survive when it's been sitting in water
right.
and processed in water. So they dry pick, and that's for the fresh fruit market.
And if people are out, you know, in right now, I mean, you know, this program will air the week before Thanksgiving. If someone is out at a farmer's market and is buying fresh cranberries, how long will those last in the refrigerator?
They'll last in the refrigerator well after Christmas and New Year's.
Oh, wow. Great. So if you're out there picking them up, you could buy, you know, 5 or 10 pounds and then be able to use them throughout the holiday season.
But the best would be to store them either in a cardboard box or in a paper bag.
Oh,
take them out
okay.
of the plastic.
So not in plastic.
Right.
Got it. So they just need to breathe a little
bit. They need to breathe.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think there, you know, there's a lot of products like that that I think where we find so much stuff that we buy at the store is packaged in plastic, and things like mushrooms. I have a friend who's a mushroom grower, and he said the absolute worst thing you can do is to put mushrooms in plastic. You want to keep them in a paper bag, and they'll last for much, much longer. So
mm-hmm.
interesting to note that as well. Well, if there's anything else, is there anything else that you would like to mention? Are there any events that that Ocean Spray or you as the Cranmas are doing that you'd like to promote?
I think we've done this.
We have.
Now, we had a chance to talk with some people from China, from Korea, and the idea was that this year 20 million millennials will be hosting their first Thanksgiving. And who do they ask for help but grandmas?
Of course.
And Ocean Spray has come up with cranmas.
Yes.
So we have given them advice. We have said, you know, don't hesitate to ask for advice.
Yeah.
We're glad to pass the torch.
Yep.
And there's lots, you know, and it's not about being perfect on your first Thanksgiving. It's about sharing it and doing it with love for family.
Well, and I think that's really important for people to know that that's the point, right? The point is not, you don't have to impress your girlfriend or your boyfriend's mother or father or in-laws with this perfect turkey. It's about that coming together around the table and about celebrating as a family.
Right. And some of the best stories are when things do not turn out perfectly.
Absolutely. You know, I think that my crying about my thinking my dad cooked the dog is probably a pretty good... I mean, that is a famous story in my family. So that's a really, you know, that's a really good one.
Thanks for listening to Feast Your Ears. Enjoy your Thanksgiving, and I hope you don't get into any fights with your families. Big thank you to David Tadashore for engineering this show. You can find Feast Your Ears, as well as lots of other great shows, at heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Heritage Radio Network is my favorite thing to listen to while I'm cooking Thanksgiving dinner. Please take a moment to like the show on iTunes and reach out to me if you have any questions. You can reach me, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com. You can follow me on social media, @thefoodballer. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.